Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Monday, August 24, I'll be reading to you from the Daily News of Newburyport. Councillors may vote on zoning tonight, by Matt Petrie, Newburyport. Following weeks of deliberation and meetings, city councillors may vote tonight on new zoning requirements that would stop developers from building tall structures in a large chunk of the city without local approval. The idea comes in response to the recent approval of the state's fiscal 2027 budget, which includes language that allows developers to circumvent some local oversight related to lot size, height, and shape on what are considered non-conforming lots. The new budget's language states that pre-existing non-conforming structures or residential uses that do not conform to zoning because of lot size or shape, frontage, lot coverage, or floor area ratio requirements may be extended or altered as of right without the need for a finding by the special permit granting authority under this paragraph. If such an extension or alteration complies with the current dimensional regulations regarding height, stories, and setback, this eliminates the permit granting powers of municipal panels such as the Newburyport Zoning Board of Appeals when it comes to buildings on non-conforming lots. A large portion of residents live on non-conforming lots. The measure, introduced by at-large City Councilor Ben Harmon, would see the creation of an R2A district and an R2B district. Originally set to be just a single R2A district, Harmon explained that after discussions, they decided to split it into two due to differences in those two areas and what they look like on the ground. The R2B contains a lot of smaller post-war homes, and that sub-district had been the focus of an earlier proposed ordinance amendment, Harmon said. The two districts would comprise current R2 neighborhoods that fall outside the city's demolition control overlay district. The default height allowance in both would drop from 35 feet to 25 feet. After going through the Planning and Development Committee and a joint public hearing with the Planning Board, the proposed bill has been amended to reduce the height in Demolition Control Overlay District to 27.5 feet. A zoning map can be found in the City Council packet showing both proposed districts. Harmon said creating the two separate districts would also help lay the groundwork for efforts currently being sponsored by Ward 4 City Councilor Beth Drake and Ward 6 City Councilor Mary Delay, who have also been in contact with residents in the proposed R2B district to work on a broader bill set to address mansionization. We had really strong engagement from builders, realtors, architects to help inform what we might do in the potential R2B district, Harmon said. And one of the reasons to create that now is to show them that we're not abandoning that effort. Mansionization is the practice of tearing down older, smaller houses in a neighborhood and building larger homes that take up most of the available lot space. Drake said she and Delay remain committed to working on a bill to take on the issue as a whole. We are working with Director Port and Planning Office to develop a new proposal that we hope to be presented to City Council in September, Drake said, referring to Planning Director Andy Port. The council is also set to hear a number of appointments and reappointments, including the reappointments of Ted Boretti to the Park Commission and Michael Hennessy as tree warden. New appointments include Jamie Pennington as a Community Preservation Act Committee representative on the Planning Board and Ella Weber to the Parks Commission. Literacy Tutoring Returns to Triton by Caitlin D. Byfield. Triton Regional School District first graders will once again receive literacy tutoring this year thanks to a recent grant from the Healy Driscoll administration. Last week, the administration announced that over 300 schools statewide, including some in the Triton Regional School District, would benefit from no-cost early literacy tutoring. The tutoring is made possible through state funding, remaining fiscal 2026 fair share funding, and a Federal Education Innovation and Research Grant from the U.S. Department of Education, a press release from Healy Driscoll administration said. Superintendent Brian Forget said this is the second year that first graders in the district will benefit from the grant. Last year, first graders used the platform Ignite Reading to receive virtual literacy tutoring, an extra tool to supplement work done by the district's literacy specialists and interventionists. Now a new group of first graders will do the same. It is a direct intervention platform and a system that we use, an online curriculum that we use to meet students who are more at risk and needing additional interventions in the reading development, Forget said. He said the tutoring comes at a crucial point in students' learning journey, as first grade is a key time for developing strong literacy skills. I would say, more than important, first grade is a pivotal literacy development year, Forget said. This grant, however, does differ from last year's, since there were 20 tutoring seats provided for each of the district's three elementary schools, Salisbury Elementary School, Newberry Elementary School, and Pine Grove Elementary School, 60 seats in total. This year, Triton is being provided with 10 seats per school, 30 seats in total, Forget said. But while there are 30 total seats, Forget said multiple children will likely use each seat, as students may not use the tutoring platform the entire school year. So with any intervention, the goal is that a student isn't receiving this intervention all year long, he said. We filter students. They get some direct instruction 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, and then cycle through. And we've filled in some of the gaps and then transition out. And then another student may transition in. So it's constantly morphing to meet student need, he said. In light of the announcement, State Representative Don Shand, Democrat from Newburyport, said the tutoring will help strengthen student literacy skills. My mother was a gifted first grade teacher who made learning to read the foundation of every child's success. I'm grateful to the Healy Driscoll administration for providing these targeted literacy grants. They will help assure all of our early elementary school students are equipped to read and excited about it, she said. Last year's free tutoring did in fact move the needle, according to Anna Bates, Triton's Director of Curriculum, Instruction and Assessment, who said the work done in 15-minute in-school sessions had a positive impact on first graders' literacy skills. We certainly saw gains in early literacy skills as measured by assessments with the Ignite Reading Program, Bates said. First grade students who entered the program with kindergarten level skills progressed through a continuum of first grade skills, and some even into second grade. We also saw this achievement in our own local literacy benchmark. Composite scores were higher than typical, with notable gains in oral reading fluency for participating students. Now, with the start of the school year around the corner, students will soon take part in tutoring again, meeting an important need, Forget said. Any staffing or resources or any other opportunity we have to provide additional intervention for students who are struggling, whether it's literacy or mathematics or science, is a benefit, he said. Budgets are always tight, and we are always looking to add more support. So obviously, any grants we can achieve or acquire through the state that allows us to provide an intervention like this absolutely meets a need. 9/11, City Plans Ceremony for 25th Anniversary by Matt Petrie, Newburyport. A quarter century after the 9/11 terrorist attacks that took the lives of thousands and reshaped the nation forever, the city is planning to host a remembrance ceremony at City Hall. September 11th changed our country and our world, Mayor Sean Reardon said. This ceremony is about taking the time together as a community to remember, to reflect, and to make sure we never forget. This year is the 25th anniversary of when terrorists hijacked four commercial jet planes, two of them slamming into the Twin Towers of New York City's World Trade Center, and another crashing into the Pentagon. The fourth plane crashed into a rural field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, after the passengers stormed the cockpit. More than 2,970 people, including hundreds of first responders, died as a result. The remembrance ceremony is set to be held on September 11th, beginning at 11 a.m. While plans are still being finalized, the ceremony may include multiple speakers, such as Reardon and first responders, a moment of reflection with local spiritual leader and music from Newburyport High School Chorus. Reardon said this will be the first 9/11 remembrance ceremony held at City Hall since he has been in office. I attend the Exchange Club's ceremony at Bartlett Mall every year, and it is always incredibly moving, and the Newburyport fire. For Newburyport, that loss also hits very close to home. Newberry High School graduate Tom Pecorelli was aboard American Airlines Flight 11, and his memory is part of our community's connection that tragic day. Department holds its own remembrance at Page headquarters, Reardon said. But with this year marking the 25th anniversary, we felt it was important for the city to come together and recognize this moment in a special way. He spoke about the impact of 9/11, noting that every generation has certain events that define a period in their lives. For our generation, September 11th, 2001 is one of those days, Reardon said. I remember my parents talking about exactly where they were when President Kennedy was assassinated. And for so many of us, 9/11 is that same kind of moment. We remember where we were, who we were with, and the shock and the sadness we felt as we watched the events unfold that day. A generation later, he said, it is important to continue to remember the nearly 3,000 lives that were lost. Recognize the extraordinary courage and sacrifice of first responders and make sure younger generations understand what happened that day. For Newburyport, that loss also hits very close to home, Reardon said. Newburyport High School graduate Tom Pecorelli was aboard American Airlines Flight 11, and his memory is a part of the community's connection to that tragic day. Departing from Boston's Logan International Airport, American Airlines Flight 11, a Boeing 767, crashed into the North Tower of the World Trade Center. The jet that slammed into the World Trade Center's South Tower, United Airlines Flight 175, also originated in Boston. Services' Kevin Hunt said it is hard to believe that it has been 25 years since the attack. It turned out to be such a pivotal event that many of our privacy laws got rewritten, Hunt said. We could no longer go into an airport and catch a plane as we used to, and we learned that there were more terrorists among us than we had ever suspected. We also fought a war in Iraq, a war in Afghanistan, and perhaps some would argue a war in Iran as a result of that attack. At-large City Councilor Ben Harmon said for those who lived through it, 9/11 is one of those days that never really leaves you. You remember exactly where you were, and that mix of shock and heartbreak comes right back again, Harmon said. One thing Harmon said he recalls is the aftermath, is how close the country felt as it rallied together in the wake of the attack. That is what I remember the most and miss the most, and what I hope that making this 25th anniversary together can help bring it back, Harmon said. City Marshal Matt Simons spoke about how 9/11 is a specially impactful day for first responders. We will always remember all of the lives lost and those who remain so deeply impacted by their loss, Simons said. We hope the heroes who responded and carry their service and legacy forward. Fire Chief Steve Bradbury did not respond to requests for comment in time for this report. As I See It, Memoirs of a Car Buff by Warren P. Russo. Wheeled vehicles have held a fascination for me as long as I can remember, undiminished by the passage of time. Even as a small child, on family road trips, I was able to identify every car that passed by, even after dark, having memorized all of their taillight configurations. Each year, my brother and I would make our subway pilgrimage to Midtown Manhattan for the annual New York Auto Show and General Motors Motorama, trips that we continued throughout life. I recall how my brother would fixate on a single vehicle, often spending so much time exploring every detail of it that there wasn't enough time left to look at everything else. And we'd have to zip around like mad to see the rest of the exhibits before closing time. Despite his automotive infatuations, I don't recall that he ever bought any of the vehicles that captivated him at the auto show. My brother's other time-wasting habit was intently examining models of a car that he already owned, like his Porsche 911, which does not change very much from year to year, but still earned his incredible attention. I soon learned to leave him to his own obsessions while I wandered off to see what was new at the show. My first new car was a 1967 Mercury Cougar model called the Dan Gurney Special, which was a euphemism for stripper, quote-unquote, a car with an attractively low price but no options, not even an AM radio. I ordered it in white so that it would be cooler in the summer, with a red vinyl interior, 3-speed transmission with a floor shift, and no air conditioning, no power disc brakes, but it did have a 289 V8 engine that frequently overheated on road trips. Fortunately, shortly after placing the order, I was able to come up with the cash to add an AM radio with a rear speaker, as well as a tinted windshield. Total cost, $2,695. I drove that Cougar all over the country for 10 years, performing my own oil changes and tune-ups in the backyard. Since I had taken all of my driving lessons in wintertime, snowstorms with the driving school's rear-wheel drive, manual transmission Plymouth sedan, I never got stuck in the snow. One winter, I even chopped down my own Christmas tree while visiting friends in Houlton, Maine, and brought that tree back to Boston, sticking far out of the Cougar's trunk. After 10 hard years on the road, including several fender benders, I finally sold the Cougar to a neighborhood kid and bought a new two-door Volvo with anemic air conditioning that was no match for its heat-absorbing dark blue paint. A few days after picking up the Volvo, I noticed a rather strong aroma of gasoline and found that I was carrying a 3-inch deep puddle of fuel in the trunk, which the dealer removed without explanation. No matter how I applied the brakes, the Volvo's noisy disc brakes always squealed loud enough to get lots of unwanted attention. The power steering was not much help either. And to top it off, every single light on that ridiculous Volvo burned out at least once, and sometimes several times, during the few months that I owned it. Even the dial light in the radio burned out, along with the dome lights, backup lights, tail lights, and dash lights. Replacing the headlights was an especially annoying, as one first had to remove the car's battery. While driving on a toll road one day, I recall a toll operator informing me that my car seemed to be moving crabwise, and I found that one of my wheels was bent. The Volvo was such a disappointment that I listed it for sale at a hefty discount to get rid of it. And although there were no takers, fate took an interest in my plight. While attending a house party on Brattle Street in Cambridge, I heard the sound of multiple impacts from the street, but three floors below. A speeding Chevrolet Impala convertible had seriously damaged 7 parked cars, even knocking some of them right up onto the sidewalk. None, however, were as damaged as my new Volvo, with both ends crushed up to the passenger compartment, turning the 3-box Volvo into a 1-box wreck. When I opened the door of the offending Impala, the drunken driver rolled out onto the street, apparently uninjured. My always reliable dad picked me up in Cambridge, and when we went to the wrecker yard the next day to see the Volvo's remains, he was incredulous at the total wreck and glad that I hadn't been in it. "I've never seen anyone so happy to see their car wrecked," said Dad, when I told him the insurance company was reimbursing the entire cost of the car. Many forgettable new and used cars followed the Volvo, as well as an international Harvester Scout that I drove for many years and many miles in all kinds of weather. Warren P. Russo is a veteran journalist and a retired U.S. Navy officer who enjoyed his New York City childhood, traveled around the world, and now lives on Plum Island. He welcomes your comments at warrenrusso7@gmail.com. Watershed Council hosts Benefit Sunset Sail, Newburyport. The Merrimack River Watershed Council will host a sunset sail on Monday, September 21st, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. aboard the schooner Ardell. The evening scale will bring together MRWC donors, supporters, and friends at the harbor, where the Merrimack River meets the sea. The Ardell typically sails out of Gloucester, and a Newburyport Harbor charter is a rare occurrence for the vessel, making this sail a unique opportunity for people to experience local maritime history under full sail, according to the MRWC. The Ardell is a pinky schooner, a style of fishing vessel that originated in Essex in the early 19th century. Built over the weekend of 2010-11 by master shipwright Harold A. Burnham, along with family and friends, the Ardell was modeled on lines from an 1845 pinky named the Maine and named for his grandmother. The event also arrives at an important moment for MRWC's work in Newburyport, following several years of concerning results from the organization's water quality monitoring. MRWC has secured funding to hire a lead scientist to spearhead a new investigation into persistent high bacteria levels in Newburyport Harbor. Proceeds from the sunset sale will help support the science, advocacy, and community partnerships needed to better understand these challenges and build deeper ties with the Newburyport community as the investigation moves forward. For nearly 50 years, the Merrimack River Watershed Council has worked to protect and conserve the Merrimack River for communities across Massachusetts and New Hampshire through science, advocacy, and community engagement. Tickets and additional details on the sunset sale are available at merrimack.org. All proceeds benefit MRWC's mission to protect and restore the Merrimack River. Upcoming events at GAR Memorial Library, West Newbury. The following activities and events are taking place in September at GAR Memorial Library, 490 Main Street. For more information, to obtain Zoom links or to register, visit westnewburylibrary.org or call 978-363-1105. Book sale drop-off, Saturday, September 12th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Those looking to donate to the library's annual book sale can do so by dropping by Old Town Hall, 491 Main Street, West Newbury. Accepted items include gently used children's and young adult, fiction, puzzles and games, gardening, cookbooks, travel and nature, art and science, history and biography, magazines, encyclopedias, textbooks or reference materials. VHS tapes and smelly mildewed items are not accepted. Preparing with a Purpose, an End-of-Life Planning Session, Monday, September 14th, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. In this workshop, Sarah Gladstone, a death doula and end-of-life planner, will guide attendees through the basic steps of documenting wishes and understanding options. The workshop will explore advanced directives, the role of a healthcare agent, how to start the conversation with loved ones, ways a death doula can support individuals and families in their planning. Participants can expect a short presentation, Q&A, and take-home materials to begin their planning. RSVP is required. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you all have a safe and well day.